So that kind of leads into sort of the question of the day, I think, which is first-line therapy in non-squamous cancer that does not have a targetable mutation.
Right.
And now, since the late May approval of the combination of carbo, pembro, and pemetrexed, that's out there on the table. I asked if you would pull a case from your practice where you considered or even used it. But first, maybe you can just talk a little bit about how you're kind of thinking it through in general right now.
Sure. So I think, as you alluded to, in a patient who has non-squamous, non-small cell lung cancer, you're convinced they don't have a driver mutation, and you're always going to get PD-L1 testing now with the 22C3 assay. If it's 50% or higher, I'm very comfortable giving pembrolizumab alone in that setting. Otherwise, you're then left with the question of chemo by itself, chemo plus bevacizumab, chemo with pembrolizumab. Where do we go now and how do we choose? I think chemotherapy alone is still a very standard approach and very appropriate, with or without bevacizumab, you know, depending on the data or sort of the patient characteristics and your thoughts about bevacizumab. The pembrolizumab data, I think I was very shocked, and most of my colleagues in academia I've spoken to have been quite surprised with that FDA approval, quite honestly, because it was a small randomized phase 2 study that didn't even have a survival benefit. And if you look into the details, the highest responses were in patients who had a TPS of greater than or equal to 50%. And their response rates to the 3-drug regimen was over, you know, close to 70, 80%. And that's really encouraging. And we've seen similar kinds of numbers when you look at other checkpoint inhibitors, like there was atezolizumab with the carboplatin pemetrexed, similar. So they think that might be real. But the question becomes, does that higher response rate with increased toxicity really translate into an overall survival benefit compared to pembrolizumab alone? And we don't know that yet. So for that group, I wonder if it's really over 50%, do I really need to add the chemo? I think if someone has a really high tumor mutation burden, like lots of liver disease or other areas, and I really need that response more than just the longer-term benefit, that's where I'll think about it for that group. When you look at the details for the subset of patients that had the 1 to 49% TPS, and you look at the response data, it actually was not better with the 3 drugs compared to the chemotherapy alone. And so in that group, I'm not sure that we're adding much by adding in pembrolizumab at that point. Again, it's only randomized phase 2. Having been taking care of lung cancer patients and doing lots of trials for over 15 years, been through a lot of randomized phase 2s that look great that in phase 3 didn't pan out, so I'm a bit hesitant to change practice based on a small subset like that. It's the patients that had very low levels that seem to benefit again. And then you have to wonder, why is it that low had benefit, high had benefit, and intermediate didn't have any? Without a clear rationale, it's harder for me to really believe it is the truth. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the data that's going to come out from the bigger trials. And those trials are ongoing. So it's not like we're going to be waiting years. We should be getting that information relatively soon. So even though we have the FDA approval, I'm not recommending the 3-drug regimen often, but that doesn't mean I've never recommended it, right? So it does become something we can talk to with our patients about and sort of decide with them if this makes sense for that particular individual.